Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. I am super excited. My special guest today is Michael Aronowitz from Teleperformance, and he serves as the Executive Vice President of Digital Sales, meaning he's overseeing their global sales line of business, working with some of the world's biggest brands, along with many new business disruptors and unicorn companies and so many things that they serve via Teleperformance. He has done so much things. We're going to talk about a lot of these initiatives he's put in place, what he's seen for clients at work, what doesn't work for companies that are struggling in the industry pre-pandemic, right now, during this pandemic, and where things are going. Michael, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Jason, thanks for having me. Looking forward to our conversation today.
So one of the things, and I thought I would start here because this puts things into perspective for people listening. If they're familiar with Teleperformance, they know that it's a large organization. There's a lot of people. When I have people come on the show, they fill out a form, they supply some information. That becomes the framework of our conversation. One of those questions is, how big is your sales team? Depending on, you know, who's coming on the podcast. And, you know, since this is a sales call center podcast, that's a reasonable question, kind of get a framework for that. You officially have the most people under you as a sales leader in any organization. Just so the audience knows, how many people are under your branch in Teleperformance?
So when it comes to the sales line of business, we have 20,000 plus agents worldwide taking inbound, making outbound calls, doing, you know, every type of sales line of business you could think of, whether that's B2B, B2C, and just I can go on and on, you know, chat, non-voice. So, you know, we have a large range of clients and we consider ourselves, you know, the leader in customer acquisition.
I love it. So 20,000 people under the sales umbrella of what the company is running and what you're in charge of. That's definitely a new one. And so that obviously comes with the challenges. It comes with some successes. It comes with, you know, the services that you're providing for your clients. Right now, and what you're seeing, we're talking about late 2021. What are some of the biggest challenges you're seeing that your clients' sales teams are struggling with, that you're then helping out with, like where they're like, okay, we're struggling with this and we just need some help?
I mean, let's throw it out there that the toughest thing right now is hiring. You know, historically, you know, call centers have been a great place and a great opportunity for people to start their career. You know, it's very common to meet someone at some point in their life worked in a call center. You know, it's a great job. It's a great opportunity. You can make a great living. But just like every other business that you come across in the U.S. and other parts of the world, there's some hiring challenges. So, you know, most of the conversations we have these days are around helping us fill a need in customer acquisition. They can't hire internally, or, you know, they've never outsourced before. And, their sales team is the holy grail of their business. And can they put it in someone else's hands? So, you know, that's the number one conversation right now we keep having is having trouble hiring.
Do you see a shift in that anytime soon or anything that's going to affect that positively?
You know, I'm not here to, you know, procrastinate or pontificate or come up with different reasons of what I see. I just think over the next 6 to 9 months, we're not going to really see a big change. And, you know, the employment's going to flip all of a sudden. It's wage rates constantly are going up. And the employment market is shrinking. So, you know, there's some tension in the marketplace. And, you know, I say to people, you know, it's really important not to put all your eggs in one basket. And you know, look at different ways to grow your business, especially on customer acquisition. That's the lifeline of your business, sales. So if you're outsourcing, you know, look and see if you could bring in another company. If you've never outsourced before, it's time to have that conversation. But either way, you know, you need a great customer acquisition team.
Well, and I love what you said about not having all your eggs in one basket, because obviously what we saw was a lot of companies who eggs were all in their internal basket with a team. Pandemic happens. Everyone goes remote. Some of the reps can handle, some can't. Now they're trying to hire. That's not working. And now what do you do versus being diversified? And, you know, just covering against any issues, even if there's internal issues, now you have kind of an external option or multiple options. What's the biggest kind of objection you hear? And obviously you're dealing with big brands, maybe some startups, like I said in the beginning, you know, some unicorns that are disrupting. But, you know, what is that objection that companies bring up more often than not about outsourcing or diversifying their sales team? Like you said, trusting someone else to run some of their revenue.
You know, it's trust. It's, hey, you know, can you do it better than we can internally? And, you know, there's lots of conversations. And the thing I tell people, you know, I'm an old veteran right now when it comes to sales, and been doing this for a long time. And there's a couple of factors that whether you do it internally or whether you outsource it, and, you know, picking the right talent, hiring the right people. The most important thing in any organization, whether you're doing it internally or externally, are you hiring the right people? Are you building the right culture? Do you have the right training in place? And, you know, where people sometimes drop the ball is that, you know, you'll find someone that is a great salesperson on the B2B side, but they're used to three appointments a day. You know, field sales has kind of moved away. So when you talk to companies who've never really done inside sales, they've only done field sales, and they've done 2 to 3 appointments a day, you know, that rep would get up in the morning, he'd grab some coffee, have his first meeting, maybe have a lunch with someone at the end of the day, bring some donuts and have 3 meetings. It's a different atmosphere right now. You're expected to do 5, 6, 7 meetings a day now with, you know, interactive video. So finding that right person, they may have been the greatest field salesperson in the world, but now you're in your room, you know, like you and I are doing a video conference. So talent is really important. So a lot of these companies, you know, they've never done this before, so they're nervous. But the flip side is that when you work with a company like ours or other outsourcers, that we're taking our success across multiple different lines of business. So we know exactly where the right people are and to hire the right people. So, you know, that's the one thing that we find that's really common is that how to build a culture, you know, how to recruit the right way, things like that. That's what we hear most often.
And that's interesting. You're talking about that field sales person going inside, like on the telephone and the volume of appointments. I think what I see a lot, and this is what I already know about your organization and the kind of work that you do, is that a lot of companies, I consider them, they're playing sales, right? They think if I hire some salespeople who know what they're doing, they have the experience, and I let them loose, they'll know what they're doing with my organization, and they'll be successful, right? And not systems, not processes, not all of these things like a machine, more like sales, just let me do what I do best. I'm a salesperson, right? And an organization that's run from the top down in that mode. And then you switch to a mode like what you're talking about with your company, which is, okay, but you're going to treat it like a business and a machine with systems and processes so you can replicate it and you can make sure that it's successful. How often do you see that issue where it's like, well, you know, we don't need scripts and we don't have scripts, or we don't even have training. We just have people.
All great questions. And I always go back to data and analytics, right? So, you know, you can't just put sales into one little bucket and say it's sales. Retention is the hardest sale whatsoever. And some people don't think of retention as sale, but you're reselling an existing customer who no longer wants your product, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't use data and analytics behind that, you don't know why your customers are asking for reasons why that they may no longer want your product, right? So two things you said, scripts. not every customer has the same issue and the same problem, nor needs the same product. So you can script things out, but who really wants to talk to someone who sounds, "Jason, how can I help you?" And they read down each line. That's not selling. That's not listening. So, you know, we use data analytics, coaching, and all these different methodologies to make a salesperson better. But I'll say this number of times throughout our podcast, putting the right person in the right role at the right time is going to be successful. And way often, most times, people put the wrong person in there because they want to fill a seat and they think they can teach someone sales. Well, we got a great training program. Great. We got a great recruiting program. Great. But you didn't put the right candidate in there, right? And so going back to something that we look at is we go with the no maybe rule, right? If we're sitting here having a conversation that maybe they'll be successful, most likely they're not, right? When you look at an NFL draft, right, and they have to pick 1, 3, 5, 7, they don't sit around the draft table and go, okay, we think this QB is going to be okay. He might make it. He might not. But, you know, let's take a risk on him. You don't, right? So when you use data and analytics and you put these things together, you build great sales programs, right? But you can't script out someone to overcome an objection. Someone who can listen at the right time of when to close and when not to close. More often than not, people never know how to ask for the sale. They're waiting for the customer on the other end to go, "Yes, I want it." And we know that doesn't happen, right? So long-winded answer, you have to really find the right people and use tools and technologies to make them better and understand what they're doing right. And when they understand that, they get better and better.
So you've been in this a long time. You mentioned you're a veteran at the sales career. And obviously there's a lot of people, you see a lot of internal campaigns. When you're talking about people and getting the right people into the role, and I love that no maybe rule, right? If it's a maybe, then it's definitely a no, because of what it's going to take to get that person to be successful, if at all. Is there certain things, or are there certain things that you're looking for, or you know, as a baseline, or is it purely campaign specific?
If anyone's ever interviewed with me, sometimes they think, you know, this guy's off the wall, because what I like to do is I like to throw crazy questions out there. So I was interviewing Jason. In the middle of the interview, I'd say something like this. I'd say, "Hey, Jason, I'm going to ask you a series of questions that are meaningless, right? There's no right or wrong answer. It's just first thing that pops in your mind, you know, tell me." And I'd say, "Hey, stuck on a desert island for 1 year, you only be able to bring one book with you. What would it be?"
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I don't know.
What about a movie? One movie. 1 year, one movie.
I would say, "What about Bob?"
What about Bob? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Hey, when was the last time you turned your phone off?
A couple weeks ago when I went 4 days on a digital detox to the Grand Canyon.
Got it. And if I was to talk to the last person you reported to and I said, give me one word to describe Jason, what would that word be?
Intense.
So what I did there, right, is I asked a series of questions to see if you can improvise, right? How quick can you make decisions on your feet? Are you honest, right? When was the last time you turned your phone off? You know, last book you started to think, right? These are things, that characteristics that you get when you're working with salespeople that you need, right? And more often than not, we do testing, right? We understand testing and all of that, but the inner personalities, the makings of a conversation. So right there, you and I were having a conversation. And if I got first book, I don't know. Last time I turned my phone off, not sure. That's a no, right? So when you're really judging talent, you know, we could look at and say, okay, this guy's got the greatest resume in the world. Okay. Anybody can do a paper resume. Let's go see what they have. You know, let's have that one-on-one real quick and see if they can have a conversation and close.
I love it. And I waffled on the book thing, because most of the time I read business books, but if I was on a desert island, I don't know. And then the only other book that could pop in my head was Jaws, but I don't think that would be fun on a desert island, just reading about man eating sharks.
Right.
when we're talking about that, because hiring, I think, is so important, not just because there's a hiring challenge for organizations, but always getting the right people is there, you know, it's a scary game for organizations. So you get it right, that's mm-hmm. great. You get it wrong, and it's going to set you back. What are the kind of deal breaker, no-go things that you're looking for? I know what you said about like whether they can think on their feet and answer it, but is there personalities, behaviors, like anything where you're just like, this type of person just generally doesn't work, or this trait?
You know, it depends on the type of sale that you're really looking at. So if, you know, if we're doing B2B sales, you know, can they do math, you know? And why can they do math? Well, if we're talking business, you know, there's always a cost per acquisition. You know, what's the cost per acquisition? What's the revenue going to be look like? What's the stream like? So, you know, math is important on B2B sales. If you're doing inbound, call it, you know, consumer sales, it's all about the upsell and the cross sell, right? It's about listening skills. So, you know, someone buys product A, what B and C go along with that, right? So listening skills. So this goes back to what we said earlier about working with a company like mine. You know, we have years and years of experience in finding the right person in the right role, where sometimes when a company needs to ramp for seasonality or a new product rollout, they don't understand the nuances that may come along with that. So it's really important when you're building these campaigns, we always create what's called the sales playbook. And in that playbook, it's fluid. We do testing for personalities and see if there's specific scores. Sometimes you may have to score an 80 or above, sometimes a 90 or above, or sometimes a 75 or above for a specific sales line of business. But that's the original profile. And as we go on 30, 60, 90 days into this, the profile is fluid and may change. And we'll find out, which I have in the past, that, you know, a certain personality trait that we thought was right for this role necessarily might not be moving forward. So creating sales playbooks and always having that back to, let's go back to recruiting and look at the results 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days from now. And then let's really have a deeper dive into training, right? So your trainer should be able to recognize immediately if this person is going to be successful or not. So if they're not going to be successful in a training, why are we going to spend 2 weeks trying to train or 3 weeks? That's not going to be successful. But hey, if you see that, you know, these people are successful, let's look deeper into that background and find more candidates like that. So it's a team effort when you're building sales programs. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's interesting that you say that about the trainer side, because I know one of my first leadership roles where I was training, I was recruiting and then training and then managing and running this small team under 20 people with some telemarketing. My boss would constantly come to me and say, well, how much time should we give people? Like, when do you know if they're going to be a good fit or not? And I'm like, by lunch on the first day, right?
Yeah. So
in training, are they asking questions? Are they engaged? I've literally had people who are just tired and they're kind of sleepy. And I'm like, if you're not excited in the first half of your first day at the most exciting point before things get real and difficult and challenging, then it's not going to work.
So I love the call center business. I love people. I like meeting new people, right? So there's a couple of things. Like if I'm ever, you know, pre-COVID, I'm in one of our centers, I love to go in the training room. And I can identify immediately who's going to be successful or not. And here's a tip to everybody. I walk in and I say, hey, I tell them who I am.
Yeah.
And then I say, I'm going to go around the room and point to you and just do me a favor and stand up. Tell me your name, your last position, and something interesting that I would remember you by, you know? So let me start it off. So, hey, I'm Michael Aronowitz. I won't say my last company, but something interesting about me is, you know, I got a full parrot that talks, boom, right? I can go around the room and I can tell you immediately who's gonna make it or not, just by the way they pop up, they say their name and something about them. You can tell who's not gonna make it because they'll go, oh, yeah, my name's Mike. My last company was, they're not going to make it because in sales, that first 30 seconds is the most important thing, that intro, right? Do you have life or you monotone? Do you have voice inflection, right? So, you know, I always pull the trainer around after the class and go, hey, if I can see that 30 seconds into this, why are we going to go 2 weeks with this person, which we know is not going to make it? Because if they're doing outbound calling, they're never going to get past the gatekeeper, right? So, you know, when's the right time to pull the plug? You're exactly right. There's no, it's in training. When we graduate someone, that's a whole different story. You know, if we graduate someone that has gone through all the processes, sometimes, you know, there's components that happen in terms of technology or other things. So we got to give them some time, right? What's the ramp to proficiency? What does that look like? So, you know, I'm a big proponent of early on in training if they're not going to make it. But once we graduate, there's a ramp to proficiency. And you got to really, it's now the company, the managers, the team's responsibility to make them successful. And another tip I'd say to everybody is this, right? Sales leaders, can you sell, right? Are you able to get on that call and save the sale? Because, you know, sales is all about positive energy. So, you know, you want to be a good sales leader. Don't let your team, the people you've hired, fail on the phone and then come back and tell them all the things they did wrong. Sidejack, get on the call, save it, and show them, right? So many times we talk about, you know, oh, they didn't do this right, they didn't do that. No, it's your job to teach someone. That's why we have sales coaches. That's why we have sales trainers. And so with me, it's not about, you know, let's cut them right away. It's right role for the right person. They went through everything. Now it's up to the leadership to make them great. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. And I agree that especially if someone's made it through training, and if you built a training with a go, no go process, not just on personality, but like actually some skills, testing and things like that. Once they graduate from there, if for some reason you have to let them go, that means, and the way I was taught was means you failed as an organization. Either you hired the wrong person or you didn't support them fully. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, looking at it in that attitude. Now that does not 100% true, and it's not always your fault, but that's the best approach I've found.
Yep. But you also have to look at the culture, the compensation. You know, do you have the right compensation model? Do you have the right culture? Is it a positive culture? You know, is it a teamwork culture? Are we high-fiving people when we get a sale or we're ringing a bell? You know, I mean, what are we doing, you know, to make people want to come to work every day and be happy? And so that's a lot to do with it too. You know, driving a happy culture. It, in sales, you know, I look at sales as somewhat to sports. You know, you're out there, and I don't know if anyone's seen the Baltimore game this week, but, you know, for three quarters, Lamar Jackson looked like he couldn't do anything right, you know, and he fumbled, and the game looked over. And, you know, he never blinked an eye and never thought, you know, he doesn't have it in him. And he came out and he just had a monster fourth quarter, right? He doesn't let the things or the distraction happen, the things he has to happen in sales. You know, three or four calls, people hang up on you. You know, law of averages tells you that, hey, no matter what, you know, it takes four calls to make one sale. Three of those could go really bad. Here comes the fourth one. So that's where coaching and motivation and culture come in.
Yeah, because sales is a tough mental thing. And just to revisit what you said about asking people in the training room to stand up and talk about it, that was a lesson I learned from a friend a long time ago, even before I got into sales management. And I've done that forever with group interviews where people come in, it's a group, and then one at a time having them stand because you see that and you know who's got it, you know, and if you can get more of those people, even before it starts, it's just a room full of strangers. They're not even sure why they're there yet because they're in the interview process. And the people who are willing to get up and, you know, have some confidence in themselves, like that's who you want.
A lot of B2B interviews we used to do in the past was in one big room. And you put two desks in a big room, one on the right, one on the left, and you call them up one by one and you have that interview. And I would be the interviewer and I talk really loud and ask them to talk really loud because you want to see. I mean, if you're doing B2B sales, you have to get past the gatekeeper, you do that. But the other tip that I give people all the time, if you want to be really great in sales, And if I go on a tangent, just bring me back in.
This is perfect.
You know, I do a lot of training and talking to people and talking to our you know, our agents and potential agents, and especially on the B2B side, right? How do you get past the gatekeeper, right? And there's a tip I tell everybody, and it may sound crazy again, but this goes back to my early days of learning how to sell. You have to learn how to talk to people. So when you're in training, knowing that you're going to start doing outbound calling, every time you can interact with someone you don't know, ask them a question. Hence, you're in the grocery store, you're checking out, right? You go to pay and it's $60. You go to the person who's checking you out and go, is $60 the average cost of when someone checks out? Like, what does the average person spend a day? And they look at you sideways like you're crazy, right? And then they tell you the number and you look to the person behind you, you go, is that about what you spend a day? Right? You're having conversations with people you've never met before. Some of them are going to be really rude to you and some of them are going to be nice. That's how you train to get past the gatekeeper, right? When you're in an elevator, the most uncomfortable conversation you can ever have with someone is turn to them and go, where are you from? They don't know. I did that last week. You know, they didn't know what to do. They looked at me again like I was crazy. Where are you from? I said, I'm from South Florida. I'm not used to this place. And then you have a conversation, right? So what this goes back to what I always say, leadership. Right? When you're building these programs, are you putting these things in place? And it goes back to what you said about script. We can write all these things down, but we have to teach the individual how to sell. And so going back to what I said earlier about when you work with a company like mine, is that we take all the learnings from the sales playbooks that we have. We take that to the first-time outsourcer who's never done this before and say, hey, you've been living in a bubble for the last 20 years. We get it. And that bubble has been very successful. But it's a different landscape out there right now. The climate has changed, and let us help you. And we take all the knowledge that you have to make your program successful, but we take a couple of bits from these five programs that are really successful to make yours just a little better. And that's why outsourcing with companies like ours, most of the time is successful if you do it with the right people, with the right resources, using data and analytics.
Got it. I love that mini masterclass on, you know, on the hiring, the recruiting, the training, kind of what you're looking for, both for managers, leaders who can take that. And then anyone who's listening to this, that's in sales and thinking, you know, am I on the right track or not? You know, hopefully that helps. One of the things I can't stop thinking about though, is organizations where they just don't have their sales process built. Maybe even the stuff that you're talking about, where it's like, here's the kind of people you want to hire. Here's what you're looking for. Here's the right people you want on the bus so we can make sure the bus gets to its destination. And I'm just thinking of organizations where they're nowhere. They're in their bubble, like you said, and then they want to outsource or they're thinking about it. Is there a point at which you actually tell an organization, no, you can't help them as an outsource partner because they don't have anything in place? Or do you work with them to put those things in place and build the machine with them so that you can then outsource?
Well, I'm in sales, so there is no no. There's never a no. Okay. There's nothing we can't do. All right. Okay. We can build things. So I go back to tools and technology, and I'm blessed to work with an organization that has so many tools and so many technologies that can help the company that you just spoke about, right? The challenge is the ego that comes along with that. Hey, you know, we're a multi-billion dollar company and we're truly successful. We don't need you. Okay, but I can make it better. You know, we have an organization that uses tools and technologies that can help you get better. So once the egos get in check, it's pretty much, you know, we work together and collaborate. The most successful programs that I'm a part of is collaboration, right? It's our company and your company working together to build a better product, to get a better end result. And when you collaborate, you get great results. We have a lot of what we call champion challengers, right? So companies that use multiple outsourcers, we have champion challengers. We share the data, we see the success, but then you take what's successful and you share that with other people. And say, hey, this is what's working for us. This is what we see. Because at the end of the day, if the company we're working for is more successful, we grow, right? If the company is not sharing the data or why it's not working and they're letting us fail, that doesn't make sense either. So, you know, it's really about collaboration with people and leaving their egos in check. And most of the clients that I work with, we're 100% transparent. We build programs for the end result, which is my job is to lower your cost per acquisition, increase revenue per transaction, and bring a higher lifetime value to your customer. If I do all those three things, I did my job.
I'm pausing here because I'm thinking about that and that model, which I think is great. And I think about that ego part that you mentioned, which is when they think they know everything and that gets in the way. And obviously that's a barrier in any sales process. When somebody thinks they know better or they're not open to any solution, consumer business-wise, then that's a tough nut to crack. I'm also thinking the other end of the spectrum where a company says, we just want you to do it all. We don't care what you do. Here's the result that we want. Take it, right? Abdicating the process or sales or client acquisition revenue to an outsource partner because they don't have an idea of how to do it internally. They're not successful. And I've seen companies do that where they hire somebody who promises the world, but they don't give them anything because they don't even know how to sell their own product successfully at scale. And then, of course, outsource partners fail. Where do you see that happen? Or do you just know to avoid those kind of people who are just like, please raise my baby?
So I live by the quote, information not shared is worthless information, right? And so give us something to go off of. You know, if you're just going to give us a piece of paper and go here, you know, sign the contract, they go build it and be successful, we're not going to know the nuances of the challenge, you know, the things that worked and didn't work. It's going to set us all back. So I go back to collaboration. You know, we have to collaborate together to build something. And if we're just seen as some outsource company, that's not who we are. We're an extension of your business. So when you hire us and we work with you, you know, we are your inside outside sales team. We're just an extension of you under a different roof. So, you know, again, I don't walk away because I feel like I can work with almost any individual and we can build something together. That's the main reason why you've reached out to me. Right. So, you know, it's very rare that someone doesn't say, hey, come on in and let's talk. And then goes, okay, we got nothing for you. It's how, you know, let me solve your problems. And these days, you know, we're all in the same kind of bubble, right? That things are changing rapidly. But what's not changing is that the lifeline of every business is their sales team. You need new customers. You need to maintain your customers. So you need new sales and you need retention. And that hasn't changed in hundreds of years.
Makes sense. I love it. And I agree. And I've seen some outsource partners, especially business development, B2B, where they're like, we'll just do it for you. And that doesn't work for most organizations because if they don't know how to make it successful, the partner won't.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is, you know, and I'll be careful the way that I say this, but, you know, I'm not the price war guy. I'm not the cheapest. You know, you with me in sales, you know, the cheapest usually is the worst, right? Because as you're building a sales team, you know, it's all about compensation and the more you sell, the more you make, right? So it's kind of like an oxymoron. I can't be the cheapest and be the best, right? So, you know, when companies are outsourcing and you're dealing with some procurement people or other people, individual, and they say, hey, you know, you're 20% more, okay? Well, are we looking at, you know, I can do more with less, right? So what most companies can do with 100 agents, I can do with 80 and drive more revenue per transaction, right? So again, the mindset of what we were talking about earlier is that, hey, there's an education on both sides. When you're doing sales, it's not about average handle time. It's not about, you know, what are the butts in the seats? It's not about hourly wages. It's about revenue per transaction. You know, it's about closing numbers. It's about upselling and cross-selling, right? It's a completely different component than a care model. So, you know, again, what you said earlier is like, when you're having these meetings, you have to make sure the people you're talking to understand the same concept. You know, I've never been with someone who says, again, I go back to sports, in the free agent market, you know, we want the cheapest guy and he's going to be the best. That just doesn't work that way, right? Mm-hmm. They're looking at, if you're pitchers, you're looking at innings pitched and ERA. If you're looking at a home run bomber, it's, you know, how many home runs they're going to have, right? So, you know, we don't pay that guy the lowest, right? We pay him the highest for performance, right? So again, when you're outsourcing, you have to really look at what you're getting, right? And if you're getting the cheapest in sales, it's probably the worst.
So let's shift a little bit. Obviously, your organization, global workforce, global sales team, different parts of the world. Everybody was affected by the pandemic. What was one of the biggest surprises and successes that you saw, especially as a sales leader, like from your internal
team? So let me start with successes. This.
Yeah.
Right. I work with some of the smartest individuals you're ever going to meet. And I don't say that just because I work for the company, but we had a work from home workforce before the pandemic. We had everything in place doing work from home. So there wasn't a big shift for us because we had the infrastructure. So it was really just a matter of pivoting, right? People and equipment. But we had the infrastructure in place to do work from home. So we were already light years ahead of most organizations. The challenge on a global scale is bandwidth, making sure that you have the right bandwidth in your home. And as you go into some of these countries that don't have the infrastructure that maybe the US has, right? So it's bandwidth issues. It's, again, in my world in sales, do you have a room that you could get on a conversation with that's not background noise, that two kids and a dog are running into the room? You know, I mean, again, we're all working from home, school from home. You know, is there a room that you can dedicate yourself? So we spent a lot of time going back to what I said earlier, when you're recruiting, to make sure that they have a dedicated workspace, that they have a good broadband connection, that they have the right tools and technology. Because there's nothing worse than a bad connection when you're trying to close someone, right? And then that becomes the excuse, you know, oh, got disconnected. When we all know disconnected right. means they hung up on you. And so, you know, for us, it wasn't a big pivot because we had the infrastructure in place.
What do you see as the near future? Let's say, you know, we're recording this October 2021, the rest of this year, next year, in two aspects, especially you being a very experienced salesperson. So the two parts that I'm really curious about is what's the near future and what's upcoming for call centers and either technology or, you know, dealing with the personnel issues, hiring issues. And then the second part is what do you see changing in the landscape for buyers, for customers, whether it's B2B or B2C, and what they're looking for and what you see as how your organization especially is going to adapt to that instead of like just doing it the same way all the time?
You know, we're seeing a shift in more, you know, emerging brands, direct to consumers brands, as retail starts to fizzle out, you know, malls are fizzling out and, you know, the brick and mortar retail stores are fizzling out. You're seeing more direct to consumers. So you're seeing more opportunities for businesses who have never really outsourced before, use call center for sales and things like that. So I see that on the horizon. I see video and live selling on the horizon as a big aspect as we move into the next 24 months, especially with the younger generation. But what I see more often than not is companies who have never done this before and now are starting to realize that they've learned, going back to what I said earlier, that, hey, I may have a captive center. I may have two captive centers, but it's really about protection of your business and diversifying where your centers are and where your people are. Because especially in a global landscape, we've learned that things can happen really quick. So I think what you're seeing now is more companies trying to understand that, hey, you know, I may be captive. This may not be the way to go into the future. The other thing that you talked about, right now the challenge is going to be people. You know, there's a wage rate that keeps rising and rising and rising. And I'm not going to get political with inflation and things like that, but companies really have to look at how they could increase revenue per transaction on cross-selling and upselling and retention and using all the tools and technologies to keep customers. Because things like inflation and things start to happen, people look at their bills, you know, as gas prices go up and things go up with heating oil, you start to look at, and that's where you better have a really good retention team. You know, you better have a good customer acquisition team, especially on B2B side now, because as more B2B companies move to the digital transformation of their business, right? Now you have a landscape of different opportunities where it may have been someone knocking at your door, right? Now you're proactively seeking something and you're going to talk to two or three individuals. So video again is prevalent, you know, face-to-face selling on B2B using video. So video on direct on consumer and B2B. But I would say this, right? And it's like the fifth time I've said it, Jason, having the right person in the right role, right? Put a lot of more effort into recruiting and training and finding that right person, because what you don't want to do, and you're going to see in a tight labor market, is when an opportunity comes along that someone can make $3, $4, or $5 an hour, they leave. Take care of your employees now more than ever. And so at my organization, we have so many countries that have won Great Places to Work. And make sure that you become a great place to work, have diversity in the workforce, and hire good people and keep them. Because the companies who are going to succeed over the next 24 months are the ones that have a diverse workforce where the sales culture is great and the people are happy. Because if they're not, they just need to walk down the street and get another job. It's an employee's market right now, right? So, you know, that's where I see the next 24 months. Take care of the people who take care of you.
And I absolutely love the intersection of what you said throughout that too, which is take care of the people, right? Hire the right people, take care of them, make it a great place to work, make it a place where people are going to want to come work so you can win that decision and keep your employees, while at the same time, figuring out ways to retain people who might want to cancel or leave as a customer, upsell, cross-sell, improve that lifetime value of a client. In that way, it funds the best place to work and being able to compensate people on performance-based and keeping people happy. And it just loops. I see what I'm sure you see sometimes, which is organizations say they're not good at the sales part, the upsell, the cross-sell, the retention. They could be, but they're just not. They're focused on the new client acquisition, not everything else. And so what happens is they feel like they don't have the money to pay more because they're hemorrhaging or bleeding out the other side. And then it's just this vicious loop. And what you're saying is two parts is solve both of those, right? You solve one, you solve the other, you solve them both at the same time, improve both at the same time. And then it's just off to the
races. There's so many companies that I help help them understand what their cost per acquisition is, right? And in this day and age, you know, what's your cost per acquisition? All in. Well, they have an all in number. I know that's radio, TV, that's paid search, non-brand search, SEO, email, SMS, social media. I can give you 11 different marketing methodologies without blinking an eye. Tell me the cost per acquisition of each one of those methodologies, right? Let me help you break that down and understand where your marketing dollars are being spent correctly. Or is there attribution? You know, okay, radio, TV, paid search, social media, are you tracking attribution? You know, and so again, you know, that's where that ego thing comes in. Right? Been doing this long enough to know that there is no perfect science when it comes to attribution, but you'll hear a lot of people say, well, we got to keep doing radio. We got to keep doing TV. Okay. And is it working? Well, yeah. How do they know? They're not doing attribution because they're not using data and analytics. Right. And then they'll retention, you know, they'll just give the store away on retention, you know, oh, 1 month free or this and that, but they're not listening to the reasons why. Of, I love your product, but I may be moving. I love your product, but I'm still waiting for it, right? That's where voice analytics come in and QA teams, right? So, you know, again, look at the whole customer journey from the time they landed on your web property to that conversation of 3 months from now when you're trying to win them back. Something happened in between that 90 days. Let's find out together why they no longer want to be your customer. There's many different reasons, but we're going into a time now where if you're not using data and analytics and digital transformation to make you better, faster, quicker, cheaper, you're going to be left behind, right? And that's where companies like mine help you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because there was a time in the past where only the big players might have the resources to pull those things off. And then there was enough share for everyone else. Now, with the technology, cloud-based, scalable systems, companies like yours that are willing to support, anybody has the chance and the ability to scale and do really well and own a very large market share based on data analytics tools, technology, resources, hiring the right people. And I agree. I mean, if you're still hoping that things are going to work, it's not. Well, Michael, I appreciate you being on here. It's so fun. I thought we were going to talk way more about other topics, and I loved where this went. It was so fun. I know that if people want to find out more information, they can go to teleperformance.com. I know there's a ton of resources on there. People want to check that out. I know that you're active on LinkedIn, so they can find you on there. Any other cool things, any other valuable things, any other ways that you want people to interact with you or find out more about what you are all doing?
I do a podcast with Stephanie Milner. You could find it on the website. We shoot the breeze of sales. Love to have you come on there one day too with us and shoot it. I'm on LinkedIn. I go to some trade shows and some conventions, but you know, just getting back into that mix right now. Plan on being more active in 2022 as things open up. But I really enjoyed my time today with you. Hopefully, you know, everyone's staying healthy and getting out there. And, you know, it's, I love sales. I can talk about it all day.
Well, we'll definitely have to do a second part, because I feel like there's still a bunch that we both wanted to talk about. And I know that'll be fun. And I'm excited to see you soon at some conferences. And I appreciate all the value shared, Michael. Thanks for coming on the show and being here with us today.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.